ואלה המשפטים אשר תשים לפניהם. And these are the ordinances that you shall place before them. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Mishpatim, Shabbat Shkalim, Shabbat Mevorchim Chodesh Adar. It's a busy Shabbat, and recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 23rd day of Shabbat, 5775, corresponding to February 12th, which used to be Abraham Lincoln's birthday. I guess it's still Abraham Lincoln's birthday, but it's not celebrated as such. Instead, President's Day is next Monday, and that includes whatever presidents are being celebrated, the birthdays thereof. I grew up in simpler times. February 12th was Lincoln's birthday. Didn't matter what day of the week it fell on. We were aware of the fact that southern states did not celebrate it, and Washington's birthday, the 22nd of February, also didn't matter what day of the week it fell on, and that was a national holiday. So now it's President's Day, and it's a Monday, which means it does not correspond to a specific date in February. In any event, that has nothing to do with us here in Israel, except that Americans who live here try to keep a little touch with the old country, and these things bring it to mind. Without further ado, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai, Adonai shima v'koli, Tihyena aznecha kashuvot lekol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivata nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi ladonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed vaharbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem viyotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeyafela laora umishibud legeula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv vinomar amen. I had occasion this week, earlier in the week, to substitute for two of the teachers here at the Israel Center. I gave shiurim on Monday and Tuesday. And because it was Parshat Mishpatim and there was so much material, one was sort of a continuation of the other without repeating any material. Monday afternoon, my regular shiur was different. But the Mishpatim issue... I said some of this last week, but I want to look at it a little bit differently. My first association whenever Parshat Mishpatim comes around is popcorn. In fact, on Monday morning shiur, I handed out popcorn to everybody, a cup of actual popcorn they could eat, and each person received one unexploded kernel of popcorn in their hand, along with a source sheet. The sheet that I handed out contained the 53 mitzvot contained in Parshat Mishpatim, which is where the idea popped into my head about popcorn. It's not the best analogy, but let's not go there. The idea was simply this. In the Aseret HaDibrot, in the Ten Commandments, which we read last week in Parshat Yitro, you have succinct statements such as, Lo tignov, you shall not steal. Two words in Hebrew, you shall not steal, four words in English, and that's it. You come to Parshat Mishpatim, and you get the sense that Lo tignov was put into a pot with a little bit of oil and maybe some salt, and it popped, and it exploded, because between Mishpatim and Parshat Kedoshim, you have many mitzvot that fit under the heading of Lo tignov. Lo tignov specifically meant not to steal people, meaning not to kidnap. In Parshat Mishpatim, there is a more elaborate statement that a person who steals another person and sells him as a slave, it's a capital offense. So already there's the popcorn effect. But then you take the concept of theft, stealing, and you see how many other mitzvot are subsumed under that simple two-word heading. You have lo tignovu, which is not to steal money, objects, sneak into someone's apartment and take things that don't belong to you and leave with them. Then there's lo tigzol, do not rob. Robbing is a form of stealing, but it means confronting the owner with a threat of violence, perhaps, and taking something from him to you. Technically speaking, both are violations of the same don't steal, yet each one is singled out for its own violation. Then you have not holding on to something that belongs to someone else and denying that you have it. It's a variation of stealing, because stealing, the object came into your possession during the commission of a crime. In this case, someone gave it to you, lent it to you, asked you to watch it, whatever, and it came into your possession legally, but the form of stealing is to deny that you have that which belongs to somebody else. Then there's the issue of delaying the wages of a day laborer. He has to be paid on time. If you delay them, you're in essence stealing, even if you're in your mind, you say, well, I'm going to pay him tomorrow or next week or next month. That's not stealing. It's a form of stealing. You have the laws in Mishpatim of the four Shomerim. The four Shomerim, just to... Let's leave it with lending. You lend something to someone and it breaks, somebody's responsible. It's a financial loss to the owner of the object, and halakha, Jewish law, has to determine, based on principles set down by the Torah, who has to pay for that. So if the borrower is responsible to compensate the owner, then we're dealing again with the rectification of something which in essence is like stealing. All the laws of damages. Who's responsible for damages that you cause inadvertently, that your animal causes, that possessions of yours cause, leaving something in the public street where somebody trips over it, or not removing ice from the sidewalk in front of your house could be your responsibility. There's money involved. There's doctor bills for the person who hurt himself and lost earnings. And these go into an intricate judgment on the part of a Beit Din to determine how much compensation there should be. The double payment of a theft, the 4 and 5 times in the case of stealing livestock and selling it or slaughtering it. So many, many different mitzvot, really, really all from those two little words, lo tignov. That's why what came to my mind was popcorn. By the time Tuesday, and there are many other examples to other mitzvot as well. By the time Tuesday Shir came around, I had switched gears, and I wanted to focus on a different aspect. We're still dealing with the huge number, think about it, 53 out of 613 in one seder. We haven't had that yet. And there are three seders that have more, but that's it. It's a big number, 53. So, still keeping that in mind, I switched my analogy to make a different point to what I called the Matan Torah sandwich. If I were to ask you, in what sedra of the Torah is the account of revelation at Sinai, Matan Torah? I think most people who know something about Torah would answer Parshat Yitro. Others would say, I have no idea, but I'm not talking about that. Parshat Yitro has the story of the events that occurred on one single day back in the time of Moshe and the generation who came out of Egypt, on the day which we commemorate each year with the holiday of Shavuot. But Matan Torah, Revelation at Sinai, was a longer process than that. It continued for another 40 days and 40 nights when Moshe Rabbeinu ascended the mountain to be taught the rest of the Torah. Now, you have to remember something else that happened as recorded in Parshat Yitro, last week's reading. Right after the Torah states the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, it says that the people panicked. They stood at a distance, and they were afraid to hear God's voice. And they said to Moshe, you tell us what God wants of us, and we'll do it. But we don't want to hear his voice. God agreed to that plan. And at the end of Parshat Mishpatim, we have what in essence is the continuation of the story of Matan Torah, where God says to Moshe, ascend the mountain and be with me, and I will give you the tablets of stone, the Torah, and the body of mitzvot, which I have written for you to teach them, the people. That is a more complete picture of Matan Torah. But the continuity of the story was interrupted for 3 mitzvot at the end of Parshat Yitro and the 53 mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim. If you could picture in your mind 2 fresh, delicious slices of bread that are now, technically they could have been stacked one on top of the other, they are now separated and filled with a scrumptious assortment of fillings. Reminded me not only of a sandwich, but specifically of the triple-decker sandwiches that were available at Shmulka Bernstein's. And if you know what I'm talking about, then you smile, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you shrug, and I'm not going to tell you about Shmulka Bernstein's. But this sandwich is filled with mitzvot, which in by virtue of the fact that it's in the middle of the account of Revelation at Sinai, makes it part of Revelation at Sinai, as is the whole Torah. Had the story been told in one continuous body of text, and then the Eile HaMishpatim, these are the ordinances which I have given you, we would get that feeling that it somehow came after and separate from the Sinai experience. But it didn't. It's part of Torah Misinai. And this is very important because there are Jews and there are many other people in the world who limit the scope of what came from God. I mean, you could start with people who don't believe anything came from God, but then you go to the people who believe in God, believe in divine revelation, and say, look at the account in Parshat Yitro. We got the Ten Commandments from God. Where'd the rest of this come from? I don't know. Moshe Rabbeinu. Wrong. It's all part of God's law. And when you read at the end of Mishpatim that God says, as I mentioned just a moment ago, I will give you the tablets of stone upon which I have engraved what I said to the people yesterday, so to speak, and I will give you the Torah, and I will give you the body of mitzvot, it gives a very different perspective on what happened at Mount Sinai. Before I continue, I want to play you a musical clip. And it's something that I have really had in mind over the many years of this show and haven't always gotten to it. So I'm going to insist that I take the time now to put on this clip. The clip is from an old album. An album that I have as a record. Today they call them a vinyl record. And I have as a cassette tape. Now, I recently ordered on the internet a very simple cassette machine which has a USB connector to put into the computer, has software which will digitalize that which is on the tape. I am inundated with my collection of tapes from way back and decided I have to start getting rid of them, but some of the music I really want to retain. So I've done it, and it works like a charm. I had a little trouble with one computer, apparently the computer that I was using, so I was draining some of its resources, and it was causing the tape to skip. Not the tape to skip, but the recording of the tape to skip. I switched it to a laptop, which was only doing the recording, and it records very nicely. This is from an old Magama Duo album. It is definitely their signature song, the song called My Zaidi. Listen to it. If you know it, remember it. If you don't know it, listen to it now for the first time. I wonder how many people are not aware of the song. It's a very, very touching song. And since earlier this month was my own Zaidi's Yahrzeit, it's being played in his memory as well. And as you will see, we're all a Zaidi, or supposed to be a Zaidi. Here's the old Magama Duo with My Zaidi.
My Zaidi lived with us in my parents' home. He used to laugh, he put me on his knee. And he spoke about his life in Poland. He spoke, but with a bitter memory. And he spoke about the soldiers who would beat him. They laughed at him, they tore his long black coat. And he spoke about a synagogue that they burnt down, and the crying that was heard beneath the smoke. But Zadie made us laugh, Zadie made us sing, and Zadie made a kiddish Friday night. And Zadie, oh my Zadie, how I love him so. And Zadie used to teach me wrong from right. His eyes lit up when he would teach me Torah. He taught me every line so carefully. He spoke about our slavery in Egypt and how God took us out to make us free. But winter went by, summer came along. I went to camp to run and play. And when I came back home, they said, Zadie's gone. And all his books were packed and stored away. I don't know how or why it came to be. It happened slowly over many years. We just stopped being Jewish like my Zadie was. And no one cared enough to shed a tear. But Zadie made us laugh, Zadie made us sing, and Zadie made us Seder Pesach night. And Zadie, oh my Zadie, how I love him so. And Zadie used to teach me wrong from right. Many winters went by, many summers came along, and now my children sit in front of me. And who will be the Zadie of my children? Who will be their Zadie if not me? Who will be the Zadies of our children? Who will be their Zadies if not we? And Zadie made us laugh, Zadie made us sing, and Zadie made a kiddish Friday night. And Zadie, oh my Zadie, how I love him so. And Zadie used to teach me wrong from right.
Be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Mishpatim and Shkalim, which we'll talk about in a short while. And each half has been started by a piece of the theme from law shows of the past, one the not-too-distant past and one from way back. And obvious connection is that we're dealing with a whole variety of laws in this Sedra. A lot of civil law, but there's also reference to criminal law as well, covered by those two shows. First half was Perry Mason, and the second half, L.A. Law. So, if you got it, you got it. If you didn't get it, you didn't get it. Before I move on to Shkalim as the first of the four special parshiot, I want to take one mitzvah from this week's Seder and present it. The mitzvah is Uvayom Hashvi'i Tishbot. And on the seventh day, Shabbat, you shall rest. This does not mean take a nice nap. It does not mean relax in a recliner and read a book. Those are both part of enjoyment of Shabbat, and both are based on rabbinic treatment of two verses in the Navi Yeshayahu, which speak about honoring Shabbat and enjoying Shabbat and how you speak on Shabbat and other things. But from the Torah law, in last week's Sedra of Yitro, commandment number 4, we had that on Shabbat, Lo ta'aseh kol melacha, you shall not do any manner of melacha. Melacha, creative activities of a specific type, and not going to go into that now. But of course, most people know that they include things like cooking and writing and lighting fire and building and weaving, all other kind of crafts, and a whole bunch of other things. Plowing, planting, picking fruit. 39 categories of melacha, countless derivatives of those 39 categories, which are known as toladot, and have equal status with the av melacha they come from. None of this I want to go in detail. Thou shalt not do any manner of melacha is partnered, as in the other side of the coin, with this mitzvah from Parshat Mishpatim, Uvayom Hashvi'i Tishbot, and on the seventh day you shall abstain from melacha. Well, wait a minute. Do not do melacha. Abstain from melacha sounds the same. In fact, they are a perfectly matched pair of mitzvot, one a positive this week and one a prohibition from last week. They are, as I said, two sides of the same coin. Violation of one is a simultaneous violation of the other. Fulfillment of one is a fulfillment, if you could use that term, of the other as well. So what's going on here? First of all, you should know that this is not unique to Shabbat. There are many mitzvot that have a positive and a negative on the same thing. Fast on Yom Kippur. Do not eat and drink on Yom Kippur. Do not delay the wages of a day laborer. Pay a day laborer on time. Many like that, and many not like that. And it would be an interesting study to see specifically which kinds of mitzvot, or which mitzvot, do not have a flip side of the coin. There is no positive command to abstain from eating non-kosher. You're just not allowed to eat non-kosher. It's a prohibition. Same thing with stealing. Not allowed to steal. There is no mitzvah that I'm aware of that says there's a mitzvah to abstain from stealing. It's a given. So when you have both sides of the coin, it's interesting to explore possible reasons why they're both there. So one answer that I like to give is motivation. The motivation of not doing what God forbids us to do is called yirah, fear of God, fear of heaven, fear of sin, fear of punishment. Call it whatever you want, but it's the major motivation where if God said you're not allowed to do this, then you're not going to do it because you do not want, so to speak, to suffer the punishment or the wrath of God. A positive mitzvah, like eating in a sukkah, like counting the omer, putting a mezuzah on your doorpost, whatever. The fulfillment of a positive mitzvah is usually, and you need to focus on that word also, usually, a result of and motivated by ahavat Hashem, love of God. Love of Torah, love of mitzvot. You're doing it because you want to do it. Obviously, there are cases where people don't want to do it, or they'd rather not getting into that. Just bigadol, the big picture, a prohibition. No, 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 not allowed. Don't do it. Don't. A positive side of that, in this particular case, to be told to abstain from melacha is very significant. In his book called The Sabbath, Dayan Grunfeld, Zichrono Levracha, by the way, The Sabbath is a thin book in English about Shabbat. It is a wonderful, wonderful treatment of the subject. And I believe that someone who is not Sabbath observant, but is leaning in that direction or is interested in looking into it, must read The Sabbath first, and then plenty of other books. I believe that someone who is completely Shomer Shabbat for his whole life should read The Sabbath once a year. It's a booster shot. It gives you a wonderful feeling towards Shabbat, whether you're into it or not. Dayan Grunfeld writes the following idea, and it appeals to me very much. When God presents to us a positive mitzvah of abstaining from melacha, what we are being asked to do is take the creative activities which fill our weekday, which we take for granted as human activity, without thinking that these are a result of human intellect and experience which comes from God. These are gifts of God. I use an example of an egg. A snake slithers up to a bird's nest and steals an egg, breaks it, and drinks or sucks out the content. That's it. What do human beings do? We 2 minute, 3 minute, 5 minute, soft boil, hard boil, poach, fry, scramble, make into an omelet, do all kinds of creative things which, in that act of cooking or frying or whatever it is, it's kind of something so common and so natural for the human being to do that he needs to pause and reflect that he's a human being and that God created the world and the human beings and imbued the human beings, endowed the human being with an intellect and an intelligence and the manual dexterity that's necessary to come up with creative activity. And these are things, in Dayan Grunfeld's words, we take these melachot and lay them at the foot of God in homage to Him. And I think that comes across only when you have something in addition to thou shalt not do any manner of melacha. That way, we're not partners with God, we're just listening to what He tells us not to do. But when it's uvayom hashvi tishbot, you shall abstain from melacha, then we become participants in a process which is geared, among other things, to not allow us to take things for granted, to be thankful for it. How many people wear clothing without realizing the serious amount of intelligence and intellect and skill and technology that goes into the simplest garment? So the fact that sewing and knitting and crocheting are forbidden on Shabbat gives us pause to reflect the quality of God's relationship with human beings, not even talking about His special relationship with the Jewish people, but of all human beings, to endow us with all of these creative skills. And that is why, I believe, sometimes you have a mitzvah aseh, a positive command that goes on the other side of the coin of a prohibition. As the month of Shvat winds down and the month of Adar approaches, it is not just Adar, but it is Nisan, which looms right after it, with the holidays in Adar of Purim and in Nisan of Pesach, which our sages sort of have packaged together to the point when a year has two Adars, Purim is moved to the second Adar, which is technically the extra month, but Purim must be that exact month before Pesach, because there is freedom and redemption in both the Purim story and the Pesach story. And the further packaging together has been or is known as the Arba Parshiot, the four portions. We have, starting with Adar, actually starting right before Adar many times, like this year, we have four Shabbatot, where we will not only read the weekly portion as scheduled, but we take out a second Torah scroll and read a small portion of the special Shabbat. The first one is this week, which is Parshat Shekalim. Shekalim, not exactly the same as the current currency of Israel, but the name came from there, referring to the collection of the half-silver shekel, the silver half-shekel of old, which has a value this year of around 20 shekel. And I'll go into the details in a moment. Well, I have to go into the details now. The Shabbat of Rosh Chodesh Adar, if it's a Shabbat, or the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh Adar, which is more common and like this year, we read the Maftir and a special Haftorah that goes with it, called Shkalim. From the Exodus, shortly thereafter, from the giving of the Torah, there was a command to give a silver half shekel to a fund that would be used for communal offerings and other needs of the tzibur, the community at large. A rich person was not allowed to give more, a poor person was not allowed to give less. He had to scrounge around for this half shekel. Pennies were changed with a money changer to receive a half shekel coin. A full shekel was broken into two half shekels. I don't mean physically broken, but changed into two half shekels. The concept of half is important because half is a part and means you're part of something bigger. To use one illustration for this mitzvah of Shkalim, if a person had a herd of cows and to his herd was born a red cow, red meaning gingy, as opposed to having black or white hairs, to have the reddish kind of hair, and it turns out that this was a potential red heifer, Para Aduma, which was very rare and very expensive. Let's say this person was moved to donate this red cow to the temple for processing and producing the potion which people use to purify themselves from contact with a dead body, which is the topic, by the way, of Parshat Para, so I don't mean to confuse things, but it was not accepted. He can't, very, very generous, sorry, we will pay you the high rate for a Para Aduma, whatever you want to do with that money, you want to donate it back, you could do that, but not the Para Aduma itself. because that is purchased from the half shekel that was shared by all Jews who contributed on an equal basis. And it goes on and on, and I don't want to get into that now. So it is an annual tax. Men are obligated, women are optional to give, children are exempt. And that was announced, says the Mishnah, in the beginning of Adar, to get your half shekel ready for the collection, which will take place later during Adar, so that the fund would be completed by Nisan, which is the beginning of the fiscal year in the Beit HaMikdash, and the korbanot and everything else, the flour and the oil and the wine that's needed in there, and many other things could be purchased with the funds from the new collection of the Machatzit HaShekel. As such, it's just a coincidence of the calendar. It does not yet relate. It relates to Pesach only in the form that Pesach is in Nisan, which is the beginning of the year for the Beit HaMikdash. But more than that, the Talmud Yerushalmi says that our shekalim that were collected serve as, my words, a vaccine against the shekalim of Haman. 2 weeks after Rosh Chodesh Adar is Purim. Purim tells the story of Haman, who desired to destroy all of the Jewish people in the kingdom of Ahasuerus, needed the king's approval for his plot, and offered to sweeten the coffers of the kingdom to the tune of 10,000 silver talents, a very large sum of silver, and he was willing to do that for the right and luxury and privilege of killing the Jews. The Torah commands the Jewish people in the beginning of Adar to start giving their half shekel, and as the Yerushalmi puts it, our shekalim, our mitzvah of shekalim, fortifies us and protects us for the shekalim that our enemy tried to use to buy permission to kill us. And that becomes a connection to Purim. And the second one, Parshat Zachor, the Shabbat right before Purim, is related to Amalek, and we'll talk about it then, and then Parshat Parah, and then Parshat HaChodesh. So it's four special Shabbatot, which span at least 5 weeks, this year 6 weeks, which means two of the Shabbatot within the four special Parshiot within those 6 weeks will be Hafsaka, not have a special reading, and go back to the usual. But that's the story. So this Shabbat is the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh Adar. We read Parshat Shekalim, and we also announce the coming Rosh Chodesh, which is next Thursday and Friday. Sources in Jewish law point out that even though Rosh Chodesh Adar this year is a Friday, the first of Adar, rather than read Parshat Shekalim on the following day, which would make it close to Rosh Chodesh, it's always pulled back to the previous Shabbat when Rosh Chodesh itself is not on Shabbat. When it is, there would be three Torahs to read from: the regular Parshat HaShavua, the special Rosh Chodesh portion, as well as, in the third Torah, the part for Shekalim. Without a Beit HaMikdash, we don't have the collection of the silver half shekels. What we have is the reading of Parshat Shekalim is one commemoration, and the custom on the day before Purim, or right that Megillah reading, to give the half coin of whatever country you live in. If it's in the United States, it's a half dollar. If it's in Israel, it's a half shekel. In England, it would be a half of a pound. And the custom developed to give three of those for various reasons. the use of the word truma three times. And some people will also give a little extra to bring the total amount that's donated to the value of the original silver half shekel, which I said this year is about 20 shekel. In the last two years or so, it was much higher, but the price of silver has dropped. And that's pretty much the story. So there are two levels of commemoration. One, the reading of Parshat Shkalim, and two, the giving zecher, commemorative, of the Machatzit HaShekel sometime before Megillah reading. And with that, the show has come to an end, with just enough time to wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Parshat Shkalim Tov, I don't know if you say that, and a Guten Chodesh because of Rosh Chodesh benching, but remember, it's next Thursday and Friday, that's Rosh Chodesh. So on the next week's show, Amir Tz Hashem, I'll wish you a Chodesh Tov as well. And for now, Lehish Tameach.